The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Great to be with you on Wednesday. Yeah, it's Wednesday. It's the middle of the week, fast-moving week. We've got a lot to get to on today's program. Sam told me that the live stream is now available on the trumpet.com website. I'm not sure where you go to on the site to get to that, but in case we ever have any trouble with the YouTube stream, hopefully you'll be able to switch over to the trumpet.com website, and we'll try to make that available to you as well. It may be that that's the direction that we're going in. Right now, of course, it's nice to be on the YouTube channel and to track the views and that sort of thing and to get some feedback from there, from Facebook and other platforms such as that. So we'll continue to use it as long as we can. On today's show, we'll talk a little bit in the second segment about the cancel culture, some truly crazy and bizarre things that are going on. And really, I guess a better word would be sad and tragic when you think about what they're doing at the British Museum, some of the songs that they're blotting out. Songs that have been sung here in the UK for centuries, for generations. It's on the way out. We know the ultimate goal for the devil is to just delete it, to just get rid of it entirely. And I'll talk in the next segment about how that we lived through a lot of this history 25, 30 years ago with spiritual Israel. And Satan's intense efforts there to blot out the truth, to cast the truth to the ground. He had great success in doing that in God's church. And you look at what he's doing in the nations of Israel today, in particular, the UK and the United States. Well, first, though, we're going to have to cover the rioting. I guess you could call it the Jacob Blake riots as they continue now into the third night. This is Kenosha, Wisconsin, the little community turning into a war zone. Blood touching blood. Wasting and destruction, as we read yesterday from Isaiah. The prophet Hosea says lying, stealing, oppression, violence, and now killing. You can hear the gunshots. Gunfire through the night. These are some of the worst images that we've seen this summer. Worse than Minneapolis. Worse than New York City. There's blood on the streets now. Blood on the streets. You have thugs marching down the streets with rifles. With firearms. And then you've got, and surprise, surprise, you've got some shop owners who see law enforcement's not there. They're not there to protect property. So they're taking matters into their own hands to protect their stores, to protect their shops. Last night, three people, amid all of that gunfire, three people were shot, two of them killed. And there's a fair bit of footage, but the thing is, you've got to go to Twitter to get to that. If you listen to Joe Scarborough this morning, he'll tell you that it's all made up. It's Donald Trump and his children that are trying to scare you. They're trying to scare you into thinking that this sort of violence is coming to the suburbs. Well, it's arrived. If you're living in Kenosha, that's a suburb of Chicago, a suburb of Milwaukee. If you're living there, it has arrived. That's the radical left accusing, after all they've done this year, accusing the Trump family of scaremongering. As if people can't look at this footage. But that's the thing. Most of this footage is coming from independent journalists or video bloggers. Where is CNN? You look at the top of these clips. BGO in the scene? BG on the scene. That's who provides you this footage, right? What is that? Who knows? It's just some individual who's probably out there with his phone. Where is CNN? Where is NBC? Why isn't MSNBC's reporter Ali Velshi, why isn't he on the scene to tell us that this is mostly peaceful? Well, because it's too dangerous now. You don't see the reporters in Kenosha. They're staying in the studio or they're in the newsroom, and yet they're still publishing lies. They're still pretending it's not happening. They're accusing all things Trump of just trying to make this into a story. The New York Times wrote this: peaceful marches in Kenosha against the police shooting of a black man gave way to fires and destruction. There have been no marches in Kenosha. Let's establish that as a fact of journalism. There have been no marches. It was rioting from day one, and now we're on day three. And the New York Times says, as if this peaceful march is just walking through Kenosha peacefully. And it gave way, you see. It gave way to violence and destruction. A peaceful march that gave way to destruction started out so peacefully, started out so innocently. The AP this morning, following the deaths of two people, it says three people shot, two fatally, during protests in Wisconsin. During protests. It's got that in the headline with the, what's in the tweet. Three people shot, two fatally, during protests. There was a CNN chyron last night that said violent protests in Kenosha. And then a few seconds later, they had changed that just to protest. So someone in the studio thought, you know what? Let's get rid of the word violent, because it's not really that violent. It's mostly peaceful. Washington Post, it says here, gunfire rang out from a crowd of protesters. They were just out protesting, says the Washington Post. It's all the same. Now, the reporters, they won't go to the front lines of Kenosha. It's too dangerous. Gunfire rang out from a crowd of protesters early Wednesday in Kenosha on the third night of unrest over the police shooting. So it's all, I guess this time around, it's justice for Jacob. Justice for Jacob Blake, the one who is resisting arrest and reaching for something in the car. We don't know yet. The police in Kenosha say that little 5-6 second video, that does not tell the whole story. And yet you have the governor jumping to conclusions. You have the governor siding with the rioters. The rioters, they're all dressed up just like those Antifa thugs that you've seen before. It's the same spirit. In some cases, it's probably the same people. It was rioting from day one. They're going after the courthouse like they did in Portland. They're dressed up in all of this makeshift body armor, just like Antifa and Black Lives Matter, just like what they've done in other cities. It's a movement. And it's gaining momentum because they're seeing their brothers have such success in Portland. Mayhem for 60, 70, 80 days straight. There was one elderly man out trying to protect his business with a fire extinguisher, blowing the smoke from that at some of these thugs. And one came from behind and knocked him unconscious. Just an old man. Another one shot in the head. There was some gruesome footage of some guy that had his arm blown off. We didn't even want to show it to you. Just appalling. And then to hear Joe Scarborough this morning on his show talk about how the Trumps are blowing this way out of proportion, how they're trying to scare you, how they're trying to tell you it's coming to the suburbs. Well, they're already going out to the neighborhoods. And see, they haven't taken the guns yet, but in Seattle and Portland, they're out there with bullhorns. They're shouting down the neighbors, saying, "You white people, get out of those homes and give them to minorities." There were images yesterday, disturbing images, of these mobs roaming the streets in Washington, D.C., telling people to salute. At one point it was kneeling, now it's raise the fist. Raise the fist against white supremacy. And most everyone did it. Shame on the one who doesn't, because she's going to be shouted down. She's going to be surrounded. She's going to be threatened. All right, yeah, that's the roaming mob, and you've got to raise your fist, or they're coming after you. Who will stand up to the mob? Well, there's one lady at least. There's another couple at a restaurant who refused to do it. Good for them. Intimidation, violence, burning, looting, intimidation, mob rule. Victor Davis Hanson had a piece about how that, you know, they've pulled down the statues. And as we were saying, when they were doing that, what happens when they're done with that? What happens when they've pulled all the statues down? Well, then they're going to go after people. And that's what's happening now. There's only so many statues to go around. There's only so many statues to be pulled down. And so now what are they doing? Well, take it up to the next level. If you're not joining our protest, you're promoting violence, they say. These violent thugs preaching. Preaching to the rest of us. If you stay silent when the mob comes by, well, you're part of the problem. You better join the mob. Just insane that this sort of thing is happening, and that you have one of the two major political parties offering their, just like with Joe Scarborough this morning, he's endorsing it or pretending it's not even happening. What did Barack Obama say last week? Clip 10.
To the young people who led us this summer, telling us we need to be better, in so many ways, you are this country's dreams fulfilled.
Dreams fulfilled, he said. The young people taking to the streets, destroying businesses, burning down furniture stores, torching all these vehicles at a dealership, smashing in windows, looting Foot Locker. And now two people are killed in Kenosha. Police officers have been gunned down. That older gentleman in St. Louis, the one out in California. People are dying. People are dying. And it's only going to get worse. And you heard not one peep out of the Democratic National Convention last week. Here's First Lady Melania Trump last night at her RNC speech. She's an immigrant to the United States, and she's calling on the rioters to stop. Clip 2.
With that in mind, I like to call on the citizens of this country to take a moment, pause, and look at things from all perspectives. I urge people to come together in a civil manner so we can work and live up to our standard American ideals. I also ask people to stop the violence and looting being done in the name of justice, and never make assumptions based on the color of a person's skin. Instead of tearing things down, let's reflect on our mistakes, be proud of our evolution, and look to our way forward. Every day, let us remember that we are one nation under God, and we need to cherish one another.
Seems like common sense. A call for peace and unity, to come together, to reflect on our mistakes, and to consider our successes. There's someone that appreciates all that America has offered her family. And you hear that more this week than you did last week. Quite a stark difference between the two platforms, as I've said. The RNC, by the way, I think there was a headline on Drudge saying that there were higher ratings last week for the DNC. I raised an eyebrow over that one, and then I saw this in the news stack today about how that online, the viewership is like 6 times higher for the Republican National Convention. So like with the polls, you wonder how many people are behind the scenes playing with the numbers, lying to you. It was a peaceful protest, and it just gave way to fire and destruction. It just gave way to it. Can't really explain it. Started out so nice. You know what? You talk about criminal negligence. People in positions of power in Wisconsin, in Kenosha, they knew this was coming. They knew it was going to get more violent. But you've heard about the leadership already this week on the show. Governor Tony Evers, he's a radical leftist Democrat. He came right out the moment this video went viral of the individual being shot by the policeman. He came out and said, while we do not have all the details yet. That's the first bit of his statement. If you're starting your statement as the governor of Wisconsin with, we do not have the details yet, then maybe you should wait until the details come in. He went on to talk about a merciless killing. A merciless killing. And then they take to the streets and they riot. Yet another pretext for this kind of destruction, a wave of destruction. One of the protesters there screaming out, death to America. The governor criticized the police immediately. The police force's, quote, excessive use of force and immediate escalation when engaging with black Wisconsinites. You see, they had it in for this young man. Here are two police officers, by the way, responding to a call for help, a 911 call. Who in this black community called the police if the police are so dangerous? Why would you call the police? Well, they called the police because there was violence going down. That's why the police were called. And then we find out about Jacob Blake, the fact that there was a warrant out for his arrest because of some kind of sexual crime. And then he's got this rap sheet with weapons and resisting arrest. And on it goes. And then video turns up of what happened on the other side of the car. And we learn that he had a knife. And he was reaching for something in the car. But he's the latest in a long line of criminals that we have to worship. We have to hold up and worship. He's a martyr now. Well, he hasn't died like George Floyd. But there have been some details to come out about that case as well. Pretty disturbing details that the major media, of course, they're not going to cover anything that would go against their narrative. They're that committed to their agenda. They're that committed. The ends justify the means. Donald Trump tweeted out yesterday or the day before, the governor should call in the National Guard in Wisconsin. It's ready, it's willing, and more than able. It would end the problem fast. And then this tweet from Ben Williamson. He's the assistant to the White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows. He tweeted out last night, local law enforcement in Wisconsin have told the White House they need at least 750 National Guard tonight. Governor Evers is only sending 250. Today, Mark Meadows called the governor and offered 500 additional guard to meet the police needs. Governor Evers declined. He declined. This was reported, I think, on Fox News as well. Here's the governor who, he sends in a few National Guard, but he doesn't send in enough. Those on the local level, they knew it was going to be bad. They knew they needed help. But the governor didn't send in much. The White House offered more, but, you know, that's the Trump White House. So we can't do anything that would suggest or even hint that this White House got it right. That's the level of derangement that we're dealing with here. Listen to this business owner. His furniture store was burned to the ground, and he came out yesterday morning to see the damage and was understandably devastated. Clip one.
What I see, I was not prepared for. I knew it was going to be a disaster, but I didn't know what a disaster looked like till I saw it.
And you, I can hear the emotion in what you're saying. I mean, what is the family feeling right now?
It's tough. You know, this is a business that my parents started 40 years ago, small, out of their garage. It was a small business. Did it just to make a few extra dollars, and eventually it grew. 31 years ago, they bought this building, and so we've been here ever since. They're very upset about it. It's emotionally hurtful. What we didn't do anything to anybody. You know, why do we deserve it?
Well, we've got to get justice for Jacob. Don't know all the details yet, but there has to be justice. So burn down the furniture store. And keep in mind, these people, right? They have insurance. So burn it down. It's all in pursuit of justice. That's what they say. Here's this man, his family, a business for 40 years. 40 years. And look at how it disrupts just the local economy, the national economy. You know well about the movement behind this. As my father wrote a little over 2 years ago, we're getting a hard look at just what the radical left is willing to do in order to seize power and stay in power. They have no respect for the rule of law. They have no respect for the rule of law. He says further on, leftist radicals hate the Constitution. And so they're out there, and anything and everything you hear them accusing the other side of, you can be sure that that's what they are doing. They are guilty. Listen to Hillary Clinton. This was advice that she gave to the Joe Biden camp on the election coming up on November 3rd. Clip 3.
So we've got to have a massive legal operation. And I know the Biden campaign is working on that. We have to have poll workers. And I urge people who are able to be a poll worker. We have to have our own teams of people to counter the force of intimidation that the Republicans and Trump are going to put outside polling places. This is a big organizational challenge, but at least we know more about what they're going to do. And, you know, Joe Biden should not concede under any circumstances, because I think this is going to drag out, and eventually I do believe he will win if we don't give an inch and if we are as focused and relentless as the other side is.
So there you go. He should not concede under any circumstances. There are not any circumstances under which the Biden camp should concede the election. If we can drag it out long enough, and they're doing that through the mail-in balloting, right? Send out 80 million ballots, harvest as many as we can for Biden. And if we have as many lawyers, if we have as many attorneys as that other evil dark side, the Republicans, then he's going to win. There she is, revealing her strategy right out in the open. And yet, this is how it works. The very same day or the next day after something she says like that, you'll have reporters in front of President Trump saying, badgering him, will you accept the results of the election? Are you saying that when you talk about the mail-in and the ballots and all that, are you saying you're not going to accept the results? And here they come out and just openly say it. Do not concede. Under any circumstances, do not concede. We will find a way to win this. What did my father say? They hate the Constitution. They're willing to do anything to seize power. And they're certainly not going to be held back by the Constitution. From Fox News today, Senator Chris Murphy, he's from Connecticut, it says he warned that democracy in the U.S. could be on its last legs, claiming that the very concept is unnatural and not likely to work long term. So it's referring to this interview that Chris Murphy, he's a senator, a Democrat, obviously. He's a U.S. senator, and he's having this interview with the New York Times. And listen to this quote. He says, I have a real belief that democracy is unnatural. It's not natural. We don't run anything important in our lives by democratic vote other than our government. He says, democracy is so unnatural that it's illogical to think it would be permanent. It will fall apart at some point, and maybe that point isn't now, but maybe it is. Maybe it is. Now, there's actually some things in that statement that we would agree with. It doesn't work. It is going to fall apart. Your Bible prophesies of that. But think about a U.S. senator who takes an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States. He takes an oath to defend the government of the United States. And there he is just casually telling the New York Times, yeah, it's not really going to work. It's not really natural. It's pretty unnatural, actually. We don't do anything else in our lives democratically. So why should we do the U.S. government that way? What did Nancy Pelosi say yesterday? She actually talked about the Constitution. We played this clip for you on yesterday's show, clip 9.
We take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And sadly, the domestic enemies to our voting system and wow. our honoring our Constitution are right at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue with their allies in the Congress of the United States.
Wow, says the reporter. Wow. Powerful statement. Enemies of the Constitution. He's in the White House. He's public enemy number one. You have her saying that one day, and then the next day, Chris Murphy, powerful senator, one of just 100 senators. He says, you know, I don't even think democracy is going to work. Forget about my oath to defend the Constitution. It's not natural. It's just not natural. These are committed Marxists. They are committed Marxists, and they have infiltrated the Democrat Party. They've taken it over. And everyone has just caved into the pressure. Everyone on that side. There's a few resisting against it. Of course, Donald Trump, foremost among them. My father wrote back in March, they're demonstrating, the Democrats, that there is virtually no limit to what they're willing to do to attack the president and to undermine the last election and the next one. They will do anything. They're demonstrating it right now. Hear this small Wisconsin town, looks like a war zone. And the morning coverage on MSNBC is that, look, Republicans are blowing this way, way out of proportion. They're trying to scare you. They're trying to scare you white people in the suburbs. This is Joe Scarborough. President Trump, this isn't from his convention. It's the speech he gave, I believe, on Friday. He's talking here about the significance, the importance of the upcoming election. This is clip four.
If we don't win, it's all gone, okay? It's all gone. And we mentioned, have to mention life, all gone. Second Amendment, gone. It's all gone. And many other things. It will be a totally different country, and ultimately it will fail. It will fail. It can't work. So the damage that they inflict will not just last a year or an election cycle. It will echo for generations, and we may never be able to escape, no matter how great our future leaders. We may never, ever escape from the damage that will be inflicted if the radical left takes over the presidency. We may never be able, remember the Supreme Court, but we may never be able to do it.
That's someone who understands the grave danger, the attack from within. It's someone who sees the sickness, to put it in the terms of Bible prophecy, the sickness from head to toe. Now, the sickness obviously goes far beyond just the policies espoused by the Democrat Party. It's our sins. It's human nature. There's a prophecy, I forget the verse, I should have jotted it down, but it was essentially a God surveying the landscape and just searching for a few good men, kind of like he did when considering what was happening to Sodom and Gomorrah and that exchange he had back and forth with Abraham. Well, what about if there's just one? Would you save the city if there's just 25 or 10 righteous men? Not one. We're descending into anarchy and chaos. And it's because of our sins, all of our sins. It's because of the sins of all of us, all of our people. But as we know, prophecy says the sickness, the violence, the destruction, the first wave of that widespread carnage during the Great Tribulation, it's Ezekiel 4 and 5 says it's sickness, it's disease, it's chaos, it's anarchy, it's violence, it's blood touching blood, it's blood filling the streets, and it's all brought on from within. And then the attack from without is just going to make matters so much worse. When we come back, we're going to look into the cancel culture and point out some of the parallels between what we're seeing today and what some of us lived through 30 some years ago. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit some feedback, you can email us at td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
America Under Attack is the booklet we've produced that points out the parallels between the attack, Satan's attack on God's church following the death of Herbert Armstrong, and then now his attack on the nations of Israel, particularly the United States and Great Britain. And you see parallels as well with this particular aspect of the assault or the attack on our nations. This effort to cancel, to delete, to erase our history. If you look at the start of chapter 7 in Raising the Ruins, that's the chapter titled Riddled with Error. I introduced the chapter by talking about Mystery of the Ages and how that when my father was fired back in 1989, one of the things that really upset him when he was in the room there with Joe Tkach Jr. was Tkach Jr.'s statement in their conversation, during their conversation, that Mystery of the Ages was riddled with error. And my father immediately challenged him on that and said, "What are you talking about? This was the summary work of Herbert Armstrong. This was his magnum opus, his crowning achievement, the book he wanted to distribute to the largest audience possible. And you're saying it's riddled with error? That it's just, it's errors all the way through?" Well, and at 1989, or during that meeting in 1989, Tkach Jr. backpedaled somewhat from that. But then years later, when we were in court, when we were in depositions, when we were fighting over Mystery of the Ages, I think his deposition was in 2002, if I'm not mistaken, but he was asked by one of our attorneys about that statement. "Did you say it was riddled with error when you fired Gerald Flurry?" And Mr. Tkach said, "Yeah, I think that was my, those were my exact words." And then he went on to explain that, well, Gerald Flurry wanted this book to be promoted, and we didn't agree with him. And of course, the deceit in those admissions, basically admitting that what they were doing in back in 1989, of course, they were trying to make all of these little edits and adjustments to the literature, discontinuing literature in some cases, but then telling brethren, "Well, you know, all the stuff you have in Mystery of the Ages, it's in other materials, so you're not missing anything. We're not really altering it. We're not really changing our doctrines. We're not really changing the history." They were. And then years later, they admitted it. After it had all been blotted out, after it had all been deleted, it was the same way that they worked to destroy the United States and Britain in prophecy. It started with a few strategic edits and deletions. Just a paragraph here, maybe a sentence here, a sentence there. And then finally, I forget the year when they came out with the revised version of the United States and Britain in prophecy, but it went from a 184-page book to 53 pages. And they basically took the teeth right out of the message. They just deleted it. And of course, that book today, were it not for the Philadelphia Church of God, it would be totally gone, unavailable. That's the way that they worked, and it was stretched out over the course of years. As they started to erase this little bit, they erased this little bit, then they reduced it down, and then finally, you know what? There's just so many problems with it, we just have to remove it entirely. You see, the devil's goal from the beginning is to blot out the truth. 2 Kings 14 says that he wants to blot out the name of Israel. He wants to blot out our nations. He wants to cancel it. Last week, or maybe this was at the convention on Monday, President Trump commenting on the way that Democrats were stating the Pledge of Allegiance. And listen to what he had to say, clip six.
But I can promise you, I can promise you a few things. Number one, we will not be taking the word God out of the Pledge of Allegiance, okay? Like they did a number of times at their caucuses, so they took the word God out. I heard it. I was listening. I said, that's strange, you know, sort of weird. You've heard it all your life, right? Under God, under God. All of a sudden, those two words are missing. I said, oh, he must have made a mistake. He must have, maybe the teleprompter wasn't working or his book wasn't working that I have right here. Something wasn't working. Must have met. But the problem was then the next day I heard it again. I said, that's not a mistake. That's pretty. And then they immediately went into a mode. No, we didn't mean that. No. We didn't say it for the convention. We didn't say it. No, that's where they're coming from. That's where they're coming from. You can say it or not say it. That is where they're coming from.
That's where they're coming from, he says. That's what they want. That's what they intend. If you call them out for it, they may backpedal a little bit. Again, some of you long-timers will remember when they would make some of those changes to the church literature and we would sound the alarm, there were those that said, oh, you're making a big deal out of nothing. It's just a few words. It's just a few words. No, that's where they're coming from. They want to remove it. The attack on Israel is in fact an attack on God. That's brought out in this latest Trumpet magazine, by the way, this September issue. The real reason the statues are under attack, and that's by Richard Palmer. There's another one in there by Brad McDonald about seeing God in our history. And this attack on our history, this attack on the statues, it's really an attack on God. Seeing God in that history. Richard's, by the way, a great article. He gave you some of this content in a program where he subbed in for me about our history with slavery and what the United States and Great Britain did to eradicate it. Portugal didn't do that. Brazil didn't do that. Oh, they were heavy into the slave trade for sure. But it was primarily Ephraim and Manasseh that stamped it out. They engaged in the slave trafficking for a time, at least a small percentage of the American population. It seems like that should be emphasized as well. And then it was stamped out. And then British citizens risked their lives on the high seas to put an end to the trafficking of it. That's in the latest issue of the Trumpet magazine. How important is it to understand this history? There's a verse in Joshua 4, verse 6, it says, that this may be a sign among you, that when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what mean you by these stones? What do you mean by these stones that you've set up? This monument that you've set up? This statue? What does it mean? Tell me. Well, in the cancel culture, you're just supposed to yank it down and bury it or burn it or wrap it in an American flag and burn that and then say death to America, just like you're some radical terrorist in Tehran. These people are roaming the streets. And sadly, you have prominent officials dressed in fine suits that are caving in to the pressure coming from these mobs. This was from the news stack yesterday. The Telegraph had an article about the British Museum and its director, Hartwig Fisher, And it says, we need to tell our visitors more about colonialism and slavery. So here we go. The British Museum. We had a lecture at our SEP a few years ago telling the young people this is what to... It was already difficult even then to go into the British Museum and to find the really... the artifacts that we would cherish, the ones that basically prove the Bible and Bible history. They prove it true. There's proof in that museum, or there was. But that's changing. It's already changed dramatically just because of social distancing. Did you know that the number of artifacts in the British Museum, it used to be 80,000 or so. Now it's down to 9,000. It's a fraction of what it was just a little while ago. The museum is being revamped. Well, for one, it's social distancing. And for another, it's social justice. The double whammy. Here is the director, the curator of the British Museum, the famed British Museum. He wrote on his blog in June that he and his colleagues were aligned with the spirit and soul of Black Lives Matter everywhere. How do these people end up in these powerful positions? They're at the control. They're at the levers of power. It's astounding. Oh yeah, we're right on board with the movement. He said, the world has a complex past, and I'm keen to broaden the authorship and the narratives we tell. It says, the relationship between the Enlightenment era, colonialism, and slavery is made explicit. The artifacts that prove, well, that's some comments that Richard included with this article yesterday. So we're on the edges of our seat, waiting to see what it is that they've taken out or shoved into the basement. And then you have this. This was from today's news stack. The founder of the British Museum, his name is Sir Hans Sloane. He's been removed from his pedestal out in front of the museum. The statue, that is. The one who founded this museum back in the, I think it's the late 1700s. His display, his statue, it has been removed. And it's put in a display case that labels him a slave owner. So here we go. Sir Hans founded the museum back in the late 1700s, and then near the end of his life, he sold 71,000 artifacts to the museum, I guess once it became just sort of a public museum. He sold all of those artifacts at a fraction of the cost, just as a parting gift to his people, to his nation. And yet this new cabinet is going to explain his work as the exploitative context, or explain it in the exploitative context of the British Empire. It says, we have pushed him off the pedestal. That's quoting the museum's curator. This is Hartwig Fisher, the same one who's right on board with Black Lives Matter. He says, in his arrogance, puffed up with self-righteousness, he says that we've pushed Sloane off his pedestal. Look, we're not going to hide anything. This is about healing. We're healing as a museum. We're healing as a nation. Starts out with just a few, let's just remove the Bible artifacts into the corners where they're kind of hard to find. Then later, well, it's a pandemic. We've got to reduce it down to about 10% of the stock. And then now you've got this movement. Oh, and by the way, we've got to tell the full story about slavery, the slave trade. And did you know what? Even the founder, his wife came from a family that owned slaves. The Telegraph says other artifacts, including those taken by Captain James Cook on his voyages, will be given new labels explaining how they were acquired by the museum through, quote, colonial conquest and military looting. See, they're very sensitive to these individuals of old and the looting they did in other nations. Now, the looting on the streets of our own nations now, that's okay. That's understandable. The looting that's going on in August of 2020, never mind that. Look, that's being blown way out of proportion. That's justified because it's all about justice. Here's this man, the founder of all people. Notice what Andrew Roberts had to say about Sir Hans Sloane, the founder of the British Museum, all those artifacts that he basically gave over to his nation. Roberts said, "Are we mature? Are we a mature country if we no longer believe that the life and work of a botanist, physician, collector, and president of the Royal Society, Sir Hans Sloane, should be celebrated, even though his wife inherited slaves, which Sloane did not free but instead profited them? Even the briefest consideration of the life of Sloane will convince most reasonable people that the British Museum, which claims that Black Lives Matter forced a certain level of urgency to its actions, has behaved disgracefully in so besmirching the memory of a good and decent man who allowed it to purchase the 71,000 artifacts that started its collection for one quarter of the sum for which his executors could have sold them." Robert says, "Sloane was a renowned doctor who was elected to the Royal Society of Physicians, aged only 27. He worked unpaid every morning, ministering to the poor, and devoted his salary to Christ Hospital. He developed the use of quinine for eye treatment, which was later employed to treat malaria. He was an early advocate of the use of inoculation to fight smallpox. He was instrumental in setting up the founding hospital and Chelsea Physic Garden. He cataloged over 800 species of plants, concentrating on those with medical properties." Does that sound like a Nazi to you? That's what they're saying now, the radical left. He's a Nazi! This is a Nazi! Andrew Roberts says, "If it's possible to have a better curriculum vitae as a philanthropist than Sloane, it is hard to think of one, even though a part of his wife's wealth derived from an evil institution. He neither bought nor sold slaves himself, and he wrote about the ill treatment of them. If 80 years after the death of Hartwig Fisher, it is discovered," this is the current curator, "it's discovered that," well, in other words, society's always changing, standards and whatever else, what happens 80 years down the road if there's something that Mr. Fisher, the current curator, what happens if something is discovered about him that's not acceptable 80 years from now? The moral of the story is clear. If you are rich, give nothing to the nation, because 250 years after your death, your bust will be removed. If an American is murdered horribly in Minnesota, and leading historians will equate your life of charitable work, medical breakthroughs, and philanthropy with the crimes of the Nazis. So, Sir Hans Sloane, the founder of the British Museum, he's been canceled. This is all in the news this week, even as we hear stories or read stories about Rule Britannia. The BBC has announced that they're not going to sing the words of the song during proms. That's an eight-week-long series of concerts. It's very patriotic. It's very popular in Britain. But now the BBC says, look, there's some lyrics, even in Rule Britannia, that some people might find offensive. So we're just going to blot that out. It's a little change. It's just a little change. Well, on and on it goes until what? The statue's pulled down. It's put in a case. We've got to get in line with the Black Lives Matter movement. We've got to retell the history. This was Boris Johnson. To his credit, yesterday he responded to this nonsense about not singing some of these patriotic songs because of three or four words in the song, clip 7.
that and they're trying to restrain me from saying this, but I if it is correct, which I cannot believe that it really is, but if it is correct that the BBC is saying that they will not sing the words of Land of Hope and Glory and Rule Britannia as they traditionally do at the end of last night of the prompts, I think it's time we stopped our cringing embarrassment about our history, about our traditions, and about our culture, and we stop this general bout of self-recrimination and wetness. I wanted to get that off my chest.
That's Boris Johnson yesterday responding to this. The Sunday Times reported this. Dalia Stavesky, 35, from Finland, who is conducting the last night, so she's one of the conductors at the last night of proms. It says she's among those who is said to be keen to modernize the evening's repertoire and reduce the patriotic elements. A BBC source said Dalia is a big supporter of Black Lives Matter. She's a big supporter, just like the current curator at the British Museum. And so they are going to make changes. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.